This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Choose the most unusual matches. Choose the best of the WWF. Choose wrestling's biggest, smallest, and strongest. Choose Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Roddy Piper's greatest hits, and wrestling's bloopers, bleeps, and body slams. Choose George the Animal Steel. Choose the Ken Patera story. Choose the life and times of Captain Lou Albano. Choose the Hulkamania series. Choose the Ultimate Warrior. And choose Macho Man Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Choose WWF World Tour, Smack and Wacko, and UK Rampages 91, 92 and 93. Choose a journey back in time. Choose Scene Your Video. It's time for everyone to dust off the VCR and plug it back into the television set as we take a trip into the Colosseum Home Video Vault with your host, Rory McNamara.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 10 of Senior Video, the show where I, Rory McNamara, stick my hand into the damp cardboard box of Colosseum videos upstairs, pull one out, and then break it down to within, or very possibly beyond, an inch of its life. However, it is impossible to perform such an undertaking alone, so joining me today, a first-timer on the Senior Video settee, a bit of an inside job once more, it must be said. Somebody who I do hope you have heard on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast over the last year or so. And that is my friend, Mr. Daniel Dwitt. Dan, welcome to the Place to Be Nation Network.
Thank you, Rory. Thanks for bringing me on for this. Looking forward to it. As I mentioned when we were sort of talking about this, spent the last sort of year watching a lot of WCW 2000 with yourself and Eric. So it's nice to look at something a little bit different. Always good to talk wrestling.
I think you definitely deserved something a bit different, let's say, to put it diplomatically, than WCW 2000, my friend. So hopefully this will be a bit more suited to you. We will tell the wrestle crazed youngsters what video we are looking at today in just a few minutes. But for now, as this is your first time on the network, why don't you introduce yourself, Dan? Why don't you tell the listeners, give them a bit of a background into your own wrestling fandom, some of your favourite things, your thoughts on the current product. Anything you want, really. The floor is yours, my man.
Right, thank you. Hello all. My name is Daniel. I've been a wrestling fan. I was just thinking of this earlier, actually, going back to probably 91, 92. So my introduction to wrestling was through a neighbour of mine. He's a couple of years older than me. He had sort of figures and videos and stuff. And it was at the time when WCW was on ITV.
Ah, yes.
So that was my sort of introduction to it. But then the videos he had were mainly WWF. So it's kind of an odd mix of watching both products at the same time, really. But him being a bit older, he sort of explained to me that there was two sort of wrestling programs on. So that's helped with that sort of initial confusion. But yeah, so I've never sort of really had a big break sort of since then. So yeah, I mean, what am I looking at? Just coming up to nearly 30 years. A fan, which is insane, really, to think how much wrestling I must have watched in that sort of time. But had sort of never really fallen out of favor with it. But there's also been sort of great times like the Attitude Era, and even sort of I think like the New Gen era sort of was as sort of not necessarily derided, but sort of as it's looked on now as not the fondest of times in wrestling. For me, I think it worked out well because I was at the age where it made sense for me to be watching wrestling. Then when I was sort of 8, 9, 10, like 1995, which is seen as a not great year of wrestling, I was only 10 years old. So all the colourful characters and stuff perfectly fit in with what I was watching. So unlike some others who are possibly older than me, who dipped away at that time, I carried on watching up until today. And today's product is, in some ways, as good as it's ever been in terms of the in-ring work, but I do miss some of the characters and sort of longer form storylines that I suppose I was used to growing up. But considering the past year that we've had globally, I think wrestling's doing quite well for itself, in all honesty.
I think it really is. And I think wrestling as a whole deserves a massive amount of credit for keeping going. You can ask questions about WWE applying, if that's the right word, to be seen as an essential service slash product. But as a whole, I think pro wrestling has done a fine job of keeping things going. As long as, you know, safety should always be paramount, and we've heard some stories from all promotions that might not always be held 100% watertight, but as long as it can be and is continuing to be so, and sadly the way things are going, we're going to be here for a few months yet. Not that I want to be a prophet of doom on a show like this, but I fear that 2021 might not be too dissimilar to 2020 in that regard. So it might be something we need to get used to, but I think all companies should pat themselves on the back, maybe after a little bit of a pause, but on the whole, I'm generally quite positive towards the fact that wrestling is still a thing. And to be honest, I do think we all need the release and the escape in times such as these. And one more question, Dan, you briefly touched on it there, and Coliseum Video is the name of the game on this show. If you started watching in the early 90s, right in the wheelhouse for quite a bunch of releases, I would say. So did you collect any Coliseum Videos? Were you a renter? Any that stick in your mind specifically?
No, I was quite the avid collector. And again, sort of thinking about this before coming on today, I was sort of going back in my mind, and I think it wouldn't be overestimate too much to say I could have had at one time upwards of 100 videos, I think.
Ooh.
I think so. I think it's possible. That's counting all pay-per-views and stuff.
That counts.
I think the first video I remember having was War Rumble 92, which kind of makes me sound like a bit like a hipster who has like the greatest album of all time as their purchase, isn't it, really?
but there are definitely worse places to start than Rumble 92.
Just the luck of the draw, I guess. But I don't think I appreciate it at the time, being sort of, what, 7-8 at the time, and obviously sort of cheering for the good guys, and then having Ric Flair win the Rumble after previously watching the 1990 and 91 with Hogan winning. Although not massive, being like a massive sort of full-on Hogan fan, don't really remember being that much of a Hogan fan, but he was the big hero at the time, so naturally I still wanted him to win more so than someone like Flair then. But then going back and realising how lucky I was to have such a great Royal Rumble in my collection that early on was lucky. Then from there, it was a case of just the video shops near me happened to have a lot of Silver Vision videos available, so maybe sort of once a month or so through pocket money or birthdays and Christmases, I'd always get sort of a good handful a year. And then when it came a bit further along and watch and reading WWF magazine, I was able to get the mail order things through. I think it was called Mega Mail through Silver Vision.
Oh yes.
And they had, and I think it was originally possibly like a thing in the magazine that you cut out and sort of send off an order for, and then from there you're on their mailing list, and they sent out the Mega Mail list was basically had a list of pretty much every single Silver Vision release, and then a list of prices and whatnot, and you just sort of ticked off what one you wanted, and then sent that back, and then with a check or postal order or whatever, and then you've got the video in about a week or so later. So having that meant that's how my collection got to the height it did, because I had a list of every single WWF video available, and I would just sort of tick off and work through and sort of build a collection that way. So while I didn't really have Sky too much growing up, I was able to sort of keep relatively up to date, or then go back and backfill quite quickly, really.
It's taken until episode 10. For Mega Mail to be referenced on this show. So that's just not good enough. So thank you, Dan. Sense has finally prevailed at this point.
Great.
So on that bombshell, will you tell the wrestle-crazed youngsters what tape we are looking at today? And was this one in your Mega Mail collection?
See, now I don't, watching it for this show, I don't recall having it. because I don't really remember much of what was on this tape, and I like to think my memory's still reasonably good in terms of like the wrestling I've seen and whatnot. So I don't think I did have this one, but I think I had one similar to it. So the tape I've picked for us to go through today is the original Super Tape from, I think it was out in 1990, but it mainly references matches from 88 and 89, I think.
Correct. When the Home Video Classics section on the network first became available, which I want to say was 3 years ago now,
yes,
the very first one I watched, for some inexplicable reason, was Super Tape 2. And yes, I will go back and watch it again to re-review it at some point in the future, dear listener, don't worry. But for some reason, I skipped out Super Tape. I'd never previously seen it. So this was the first time I had ever seen this particular video, and therefore the very first time I had seen a rather big match that we will get to in due course. So then, we load up with a montage of various superstars, most of which seems to be taken from WrestleMania 3 for some reason, but I can live with that. Mooney joins us with a great addition to our home video library, or at least I think that's what he said. I can only assume they blew their production budget on the segment involving Mean Gene a bit later, as Sean has to make do with black walls, black roof, and very possibly for preventing Freudian slip, for presenting this, very possibly a black heart. However, we kick off with our fan favourite match, one Matthew Mallow requested a real physical matchup between Ronnie Garvin and Mr. Perfect. Okay, I'm on board with this one. They both mentioned Matthew by name, so that's nice. So off we go to somewhere in late 1989. I couldn't find the venue where this took place. Richard Land, if you're listening, I'm sure you'll know. Commentary team Tony Schiavone, more on him later, and Lord Alfred Hayes, more on him later. The genius runs to the ring to deliver his poem in that off-kilter ABCB style of his. He also takes time to mention coming in second place, so I suppose this one was also self-penned. I should note that the Wrestling Challenge banners are very visible for this one, and about bloody time they were on the network. Hopefully, by the time this show drops, the first 13 editions of Challenge will finally be there. Still, no rush, eh? Maybe I'll look at one or two of those for a special on here one day as well. Perfect has opted for the pink and green singlet today, making him look even more like Craig McLaughlin than usual. Hey, Mona. Neither combatant give much quarter in the early going, allowing time for Alfred to incorrectly use the word indomitable. Garvin then strikes out of nowhere with a flurry of slams and a big shot right to the noggin. Perfect needs a breather after that. Back in where we get the Super WrestleMania grapple, but Garvin wins that as well. Another punch sees Hennig take a tumble over the top rope. I'm liking what they're going for here. Perfect tries for the third time, but quickly scrabbles back outside. Garvin is being made to look like a threat, and I think that's the way to go. Top wrist lock battle. That's something we should see more of these days. They are very evenly matched here until Perfect grabs himself some follicles. He turns it into a headlock, but the hair is still tightly held. Then a shot or two right to the chest and jaw. He lays in some stiff-looking shots, and this one has got a bit of needle. Face rake by Ronnie to get himself back in the match, and then a no-nonsense headbutt. Crowd are with him as he gets off another one, then a lovely jackknife roll up for a count of two. Perfect tries his sunset flip, but Garvin blocks with a good old fist, then a standing splash for two. The Garvin stomp, and yes, I typed that in capital letters, is next. And now the reverse figure of four leg lock. I think that name needs a bit of work. He has some time to think about that as Perfect kicks him off. Hennig neck snap, always a pleasure, then again lays in the shots hard to the back of the neck, does Perfect. Now we get a proper chop battle in the centre of the ring, and I love it, and there's a sleeper by the Rugged One. Oddly, Garvin uses it as the setup for a cover. I suppose in Ronnie's head, it is always Royal Rumble 1990. But Perfect gets his foot on the ropes before the three count. Hennig takes a trip to the turnbuckles in a corner for a 10, but he can still kick out from a Garvin roll-up attempt. Then we get a double down after they both run the ropes. Both men get up at the same time, and Garvin strikes first with the inside cradle, but Perfect reverses and brilliantly managed to disguise any hold of the tights he may have had, retaining his undefeated record. Ronnie gives him an early receipt straight after the bell. Dan, no quarter asked or given in this one, and what a start to the tape.
Yeah, a really good start. When I saw that was the opening match, Garvin versus Perfect, I had an idea in my head what I sort of wanted it and hoped it would be, and I think it sort of met those expectations. Certainly, it wasn't by any means an absolute sort of barn-burning sort of five-star classic, but it was really, really good. Great sort of technically sound match, and Perfect bumping like and setting like he does. Garvin with his sort of decent sort of brawling, hard-hitting sort of brawling style. Yeah. Great way to start a video, I think. If this is sort of how the rest of the tape would play out, then great. But yeah, good way to start it, certainly.
Is time finally starting being kind to Ronnie Garvin?
I think so. I think the more people go back and watch what he does, with the sort of looking how modern wrestling is today, with that sort of maybe sort of, I wouldn't say strong styles, possibly going too far, but I mean in that sort of snugger sort of style and sort of more deliberate manner of how he wrestles. I think it's something that certainly fits into how some people sort of wrestle today, and I think it does sort of fit in more so than maybe in the Attitude Era and sort of even up to quite recently what we were getting shown on our TVs then. Wouldn't match with what Garvin was showing us, but I think if you put someone like Garvin in a promotion today, I think you definitely have an audience.
I think so. I think there would be a lot of fans who would be able to get behind his no nonsense style, and I think you raising the point of strong style there. Yeah, that's a good one. Don't want to take this to ridiculous lengths or anything, but you can see bits and pieces of it there. Some of our strong style favourites, I know we've all got them out there. Garvin, a lot of his style, not a million miles removed. And as that is a style I these days am extremely amenable to, just, I'm going to use the word, rugged, no nonsense, fists, kicks, hard slams, big clotheslines, that sort of thing. I'm a lot more positive towards than I used to be, certainly a good 5 or 6 years ago. And as Ronnie Garvin, late 80s, early 90s, when he's in his mid-40s at this point, lest we forget. So this is an arrow straight to my heart, really. Perfect bumping ability. I still think, and I've caught myself a little bit of flack about this in other places, that the very best thing about Hennig was his selling. Doesn't always have a massive amount on offense, but his heel comebacks, as they were, and more on those another match a bit later on, they did work. I do love the neck snap. What a gorgeous move that is. He gave, be it by accident or by design, a lot of offense towards Garvin, and he sold the slaps and the chops like a champion. There's no arguing. And I love the finish too. It would have been very easy for somebody who, with Rumble 90 coming up or not, still fairly low on the totem pole, just to eat a Perfect Plex here, like dear old Terry Taylor did at SummerSlam 89. But it seemed like a very respectful finish, that Garvin was just caught going for an inside cradle. Perfect enough now to switch it back, hold the tights without nobody realising. Could be completely wrong, but I think these two really enjoyed working with each other. Perfect was able to let rip by flying all over the shop, and Garvin could do his stuff. So yeah, hey, 5 stars, absolutely not. Far too short for that, and for me, and any match that approaches anywhere close to 5 has to have a bit of meaning behind it. So again, rein it in just a little bit, but a really fine match here, and one I hope we will be mentioning when we get to the final awards a little bit later. Very good start. Manager's profile. The views are not necessarily those of Coliseum Video. Go on, Bobby, my son, give it some, will you? Bobby Heenan, by the way, in case you haven't guessed. This is basically a preview of WrestleMania 6 in all but name. Hogan and Warrior have huge egos. Okay, that's a good start. Jake is a common thief. Not sure I can give you that one. Dusty and Sapphire make a twosome, threesome, or 25th-some. Rude is on his way for better things. Yeah, but not here. The Colossal Connection will be champions forever. And what else is on his mind? None of our business. Okay. We all love Bobby Heenan in these parts. If we don't, then we don't really want to talk to you, quite frankly. However, because of his very high standards, I think, in the name of impartiality, and that is what my shows are all about, we have to call out when he doesn't quite hit the heights we know he's capable of. And Dan, this was one of those occasions for me. Had its moments, but I think it's fair to expect better from the great man.
Yes, definitely. When it came up with a manager's profile on Bobby Heenan, I was expecting to hear more about him. I was expecting some sort of short, not too extensive, but just a short sort of 5-minute, like, quick retrospective, maybe starting from, like, Mania 1 when him managing Big John Studd, then to 3 with Andre, and then up
to... Yeah, that would have been cool.
To today, to the past sort of year with Rude. But what we got with it was him just, like, yeah, kind of promoting WrestleMania 6 and then doing his sort of usual, but good, bits on all the different superstars, that which wasn't really about him. And then the last 30 seconds was a bit about the Heenan family, which was fine, but not what I thought it was going to be. So, yeah, I think sort of my last sort of summarising line on it was far too short and in places a bit boring because it just wasn't what I thought it would be. And that's bad coming from Bobby Heenan, which is very rare for me to say something like that about him. But it just wasn't what it could have been.
I don't even think it was 2 minutes, was it? It seemed to fly past very quickly. Yeah, 2 minutes is probably being generous, yeah. Just announce this as a WrestleMania 6 preview where Heenan buries the heel. That would be something. Buries the faces and praises the heels. I'd be okay with that. Yeah, manager's profile had me very excited for a while. And we got rather by the numbers stuff. Again, Heenan phoning it in is better than 98% of the guys on the microphone then and now on their very, very best day. But he is Bobby Heenan. I want to hear him on his best day because there's nothing else like him, again, then or since. And we got a fairly vapid bumper for WrestleMania 6. There is another bumper for WrestleMania 6 right at the very end of this video, which we will get to. I will say this one felt a little more naturally applied to the tape than that one, but no matter. But yeah, Bobby is Bobby, and I'm always going to be okay with that, but well, we want Bobby, you know what I mean? Gene gets the shortest straw as he profiles the Bushwhackers, and he shares it with all of us. He takes a very bumpy ride to their outhouse. Gene is surprised that we have been rolling tape already, and then Luke and Butch emerge from the, well, I'll say it again, the outhouse. They don't know what coat of paint means, just as I don't know what great matches from the Bushwhackers means, but that's the phrase Gene uses. They invite him in for a spot of grub, or should that be grubs, as we get to see their MSG debut against the Bolsheviks from December the 30th, 1988. For a full play-by-play of this one, listen to the Place to Be podcast number 509, tucked away there in the archives, released 2 years ago to the very day of this recording, fact fans. Short version, Bushwhackers win with the battering ram stomach breaker combination. Back to Gene, who is being cooked a Barbie. Do you get where we are going with this one yet? They all tuck into a buzzard. And it must have had some effect on Gene, as he tells us the next match is joined in progress, when sadly it isn't. This time they face the Brooklyn Brawler and Bad News Brown from the June 5th edition of Primetime Wrestling. For a full play-by-play of this one, look anywhere else. The Whackers win after 6 or so minutes by pinning the Brawler. Mm-hmm. One more match now pits them against the Powers of Pain from the Maple Leaf Gardens in October 1989. For a full play-by-play, forget it. Hard camera is behind the rampway for this, which always gives me a bit of a jip. It's a convenient excuse for me not to pay attention to this match, though, which the Whackers take in 9 minutes after Fuji and his cane get involved. Could have done that 10 minutes earlier. Back we go to the guys, and the barbecue has turned Gene into a Bushwhacker. You know what doesn't look quite so bad now? When your da is throwing a barbecue, and he's wearing the Muscle Man apron, and you get a burger, and it's a black and charred mess on the outside, and it's red and raw and cold in the middle. I miss those days compared to this segment. Dan, you chose it. You've got to talk about it. That's how it works on this program, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Instant apologies for that then.
Dan. Apologies.
This is something I do actually remember watching, but as I mentioned at the start, I don't think it's from this. I don't think I ever previously seen the Super. I think this may have been on one of those funniest moment type compilation things. So I remember the cutaways with Gene and the Bushwhackers, but I don't remember any of the matches. And I'm glad I don't remember the matches. I hope I instantly forget them as well, because they were poor. They were so long as well. I mean, the Bolsheviks match, I think, must have been close to 10 minutes. I don't remember the exact time of it, but that was way too long. Considering that was their first match, surely they should have just debuted and won quite quickly.
Yes.
But there we go. The Bandage Brown and Brawler, I didn't even know they were a tag team, so God knows why that even happened. And then the Power to Pain match, I liked a bit of it, but that's probably because Power to Pain were in getting most of the offense, and I do actually quite like them. And I see, after watching two really boring matches of the Bushwhackers, I like to see them get some bit of comeuppance in the end, I guess, even if they didn't, you know, still sort of stole a win by DQ. The only sort of slight joy I got out of it was the Mean Gene bit at the end when he became a Bushwhacker. Apart from that, it was long drawn out, sort of nearly half an hour, I think, of the tape used up there. But there we go.
I was disappointed at Gene at the end. If you're going to do it, just bloody do it. He didn't even drop a mate. Come on. That's the least I ask for. I'm not going to diss him for having to put up with this segment. Now, Gene in, let's call them, compromising positions, a bit of a feature of many of the tapes I have already watched. Put your back into it a bit, son. Although, in the cold light of day, I see where you were coming from. The Bushwhackers, I just can't. Maybe you had to be there. I don't know. And yes, I know your average, can I use the word, let's say, well-read wrestling fan, to be very polite, will turn around and tell you that, oh, the Sheep Herd has had some great stuff. And yes, I've seen a couple of things here and there on the network. Early clashes, likeable enough. But I would need a lot more convincing that Sheep Herders matches are worth checking out if I can. Do let me know if you're listening to this, any that can put aside my skepticism. But word of warning, it's going to take a fair bit of doing. Every Bushwhackers match is the same. Okay, give or take an extra lick of the referee's head here and there, or a grab of things that they shouldn't be grabbing at WrestleMania 5. Otherwise, there is a reason I skipped over the blow-by-blow accounts of these matches. You don't want to hear them. You don't need to hear them. Yes, they're in the Hall of Fame, and that's very nice, and I'm sure they're pleasant enough chaps, but I can't really watch them. It was bad enough when I had to see them doing up Lord Alfred Hayes' house for Smack and Whack'em. Judging by the selection process for matches on Coliseum videos, especially around this time, my association with them, I fear, is only just beginning. So yay for me and Senior Video. Now it is time to increase your knowledge and vocabulary here at the WWF. No, not by listening to me, said he loftily, but Windermere's own Lord Alfred Hayes. The thousands and thousands of intricate holds mark wrestling out from other sports. And yes, I chose the term mark wrestling out advisedly. We get some clips of the Rockers doing such move over Wrestle Kingdom sequences as Skin the Cat, named for the first time, I think, and a double drop kick. We also hear of something called the Human Cannonball, which for me is just toss one opponent into the other, but hey, I don't have a peerage. I want to say that the facebreaker and midsection blow never caught on as descriptions either. Was this translated into Mandarin and then back again or something? Sadly, such a look at high-flying moves would be complete without Jimmy Snuka, I've written. I think I meant him complete there. He uses his moves for different situations. Yes, he certainly does. Yeah, we can, looking back from 30 years distance, Dan, we can allow ourselves a small smile at the primitive nature at some of the moves here, although I am now a Rockers fan, let it be said. But having this on the tape was a fairly decent change of pace. And It's a new segment. It's not really connected to anything we've seen before. And they were trying a bit with it.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. I it was a different sort of change of pace. It was something different to offer. I mean, I imagine sort of on the, I've not seen the actual cover of the video, but I can imagine it being a sort of a star with something and learn move names with Lord Alfred or something, which is, and it didn't hang around too long. It was like, was it 5 minutes, if that? And it's just something different, another way to sort of, another sort of thing that isn't just another match or something else. And yeah, why not use someone like the Rockers and give them a little sort of spotlight, and in a weird way sort of put them over as a team who have plenty of different moves and a great arsenal. And if you're watching sort of at the time and someone, you go, oh yeah, Rockers, yeah, really good tag team, I really like them. Good to learn sort of some of their moves and stuff without having to worry about the quick pace of the match and then sometimes moves not getting called properly or missed or something. To have that there, it was quite good. Yes, I agree that some of the names are a bit different or probably not actually what they'll be called going forward. But no, it's a very interesting segment, and sort of I think it's something that I think appears in other videos, but you'll stumble upon that when you do, I guess.
All right, okay. Yeah, I hope so.
I certainly remember it being elsewhere, definitely.
Okay. Yes, because the WWF are criticised, and the WWE are criticised for not paying much attention to, you know, that wrestling lark. So here, when we get a segment on a video where moves are being broken down and shown in slow motion, we shouldn't knock it and dismiss it out of hand. We can amuse ourselves with the slight quaintness of it here and there. But I think by and large, it's a good attempt to emphasize a bit of the wrestling. And any Rockers on any tape is fine by me. Any Jimmy Snuka on any tape, just listen back to any of the 9 shows I've done before. My thoughts, and I hope all of yours, are already well documented about the Superfly. Now we go to our first feature match, as it is called, by Mr. Mooney, and it's Rick Rude versus Tito Santana from the Boston Garden from February the 11th, 1989. This one could have some promise, even with Ron Trongard on the call. And what feels like 2 years of stalling from the Ravishing One before we start off with a show of strength, as Ron calls it. He is obviously an Echo and the Bunnymen fan. Whilst I dig through my iTunes to find that song to play for you at the end of this programme, the strength test is still going on. Santana takes it with a good old stomp to the hand, then I think we clip to Rude hiding in the corner. Tito takes this opportunity for a bit of flexing and then calls for a test of strength himself, but he just won one. Rude doesn't want to go 0-2 on those, so he just boots Tito right in the stomach. Good lad. Headlock is slapped on and that gets worked into the top wristlock battle again. Okay, I don't like it this much. Match is going nowhere fast at the moment, I'm afraid, as Rude switches back to the headlock. Santana fights out with some punches and then hard whips to opposite corners. That's more like it. He then clamps on a sort of camel clutch, which is an odd move for a face, I want to say, in between shaking his own hips. In Ron's words, he is laying the lumber to Rick Rude. In a spot that is downright anathema for a baby face, he tries a butt drop but gets met with knees to the balls. Well, have we just seen a double turn here or something? Inverted atomic drop by Rude, and now he starts some focused offense, including an early tryout for the too injured to do the hip swivel spot. Make a note. Rear chin lock of his own. Santana tries to back out of it and succeeds, then some shoulder blocks in the corner, but gets caught by a boot on a charge. Rude with a forearm off the top rope, and now the match slows down. Well, slows down some more. Tired shots to the face by Rude, and he is out of ideas already. Or at least he would have been if he actually did anything. Cover gets a 2 count and they battle over a suplex, which is won by Santana. Rude tries a counter slam, but his back is too injured. Tito with an inverted atomic drop of his own, and then the good old 10 headshots to the buckle. He calls for the figure of four, but Rick gets to the ropes with consummate ease, all told. He escapes outside, but Tito follows him with a shot to the back, and now a sunset flip attempt. But obvs, Rude holds onto the ropes and is able to keep Santana down for the 3 count. Dan, interested on your thoughts on this one. For me, it did pick up a little in the last 4 or 5 minutes, but the ensuing 10 or 11 were a very long 10 or 11. And I take no pleasure in saying that because I'm a fan of both of these fellas.
Likewise, my opening sort of first few words before the match started was, this could be all right. And my last few words at the end of the match was, this was not good, in short summary. While it did pick up towards the end, and that bit at the end was quite good, it was just, there was so much delaying and stalling and rest spots to start off. Like you said, it was like, yeah, good sort of 10 minutes of just virtually nothingness. I typed the letter Z 3 times in a row, multiple times in this. So, yeah, like the test of strength was just Z, Z, Z. And then that camel clutch again, Z, Z, Z again. It just didn't go the way I thought it would go. I don't know sort of the reason why it went like the way it did. You'd think it would be more of what we saw at the end of the match, sort of to start with, and then maybe a bit of a rest in between, and then build up again. But no, it was a very odd start to the match, and it didn't do enough towards the end to make up for that for me. It was disappointing overall, I think.
Yeah, 16 minutes is pretty standard for this sort of MSG match. It seems crazy now that when you just look at the MSG cards from 1985 onwards, and you look at some of the match times, and what? 18, 90, 20 minutes for people who have no business going that length of time, naming no names to protect the guilty. And it's every show, at least one of them. And there's at least these two should be capable of getting there. Although at this stage, I would say I'd agree with the boys at the Place to Be podcast that Rude, up until WrestleMania 5 in the WWF, is no great shakes. It takes him a while to figure it out. You've got the match versus Steamboat at Rumble 88, which is just okay. You've got the complete snooze fest. You need some Zeds for that one, Dan, against Jake at WrestleMania 4. I can barely get the words out to describe it. Nothing at SummerSlam 88 worthy of the name because they didn't put the right people against each other. Survivor Series 88 is what it is. You've got the pose down at Rumble 89, which a lot of people like. I am not within that number. And you've got a lot of MSG matches that if you go back and listen to Place to Be podcast, you'll hear. I don't know if he was being overwhelmed by the character at this point. He didn't know how to equate that with the in-ring work. Whatever it is, it just wasn't happening. And Tito could have got a bit more out of this one himself, I think. But as I said there in my notes, he was virtually working heel, or that's at least how it seemed to me for the first 10 minutes, which was truly bizarre. I'd have no idea what went on there. Did they get the wrong agent notes or something? Truly, truly strange. I think it says a lot that Tito actually played a fairly effective one. And let's face it, there aren't many opportunities to see bad guy Santana out there. So even if it was an unhappy accident, this does at least have some nuisance value for that. But it took so long to get going. The stalling, the tests of strengths, the wrist locks that didn't factor into anywhere else in the match at all. They got decent in the last 3 or 4 minutes. But for me, this one was a huge letdown. And a technical point, say I'm big fan of Tito, but I really don't like that waggling your legs in the air to try to kick out thing. I'm okay with letting my suspension of disbelief run amok, and that if you are able to sit down on your opponent and hold onto the ropes after they've gone for a sunset flip, that they just can't kick out, that the strength on their chest is too much. I don't need Tito wriggling his knees up and down to show that he can't kick out. I get it. It just flapping around like a fish, it doesn't even look like you're trying to kick out. So you're trying too hard in the first place and you're getting nowhere near where you want to. So just a technical point, because of course I have every right to criticize Tito Santana in the ring, don't I? But nevertheless, when I saw the match list for this one, it piqued my interest, but it pricked my interest during the 60 minutes we actually got. A real, real shame. Let's see if we can pick things up with our second featured match, Jake Roberts versus Ted DiBiase, coming from the April 24th, 1989 MSG show. And yes, the P2B crew have got you covered for this one as well. Blow by blow, play by play accounts of this one, I will point you in the direction of Place to Be podcast number 520. So I will spare you, dear listener, what I will tell you that again, after about 14, 15 minutes or so it seemed to me. Jake actually got the pinfall win, which I, if I didn't know any better, would have been a huge surprise. After DiBiase blocked the first roll-up attempt, but didn't block the second. Dan, I had heard the Place to Be podcast about this one two or so years ago, and I had seen this match before, so I knew what was coming. But at the time, and Jake did have to disappear for a few months, he had some business to take care of, was still 50 weeks away from WrestleMania 6. Jake getting a pinfall win, be it by roll-up or otherwise. Wow. That's not normally how these sort of feuds go.
It's not, no. I would have banked on the finish from the previous match, like DiBiase with a roll-up feet on the ropes type situation to win, or Virgil getting involved in some way to win. But no, interesting to see Roberts getting a win here. I guess it's kind of a house show sort of set up, even though it was sort of taped. So it's pretty good for the crowd to see Roberts get a win. And the crowd were really into this, and rightly so. I like this. I think my opening words before starting this match were, please be good, just based on the last match.
We deserved it, yeah.
Please this one be good. And it was. I think it was a good match. I think I've seen them wrestle better matches than these two in their sort of feud. But this was really good. This was still really good. And yeah, I was happy with it.
Yeah, again, probably too long for what it was, but as we've just said, you have to expect it at these shows. And I think they just about had enough going within them. You know, Jake, the master of psychology, DiBiase stuff, so smooth and crisp, everything he does, that they were able to keep it just before it started to go over the limit. There certainly was nowhere near, other than the first couple of minutes, as much stalling or dicking around as in the previous match. Again, everything Jake did had such a purpose to it. DiBiase, I don't think he's underrated anymore. He might have been. I think he's now properly rated, but all well and good, so he should be. Now, his moves look so impactful. I love the fist drop. I love the back elbow. His selling of any headshots are exemplary. And you know, these wet behind the ears bunch are there who represent pro wrestling today. I'm only joking. They could do something from learning from this fella. Jake getting the pinfall win at the start, I believe, was the real start of the feud. If I'm wrong, do write in and correct me. A major boon, and you can do it that way. You don't absolutely have to have the heel get the upper hand at every single turn and for the babyface to avenge in the end. That's classic wrestling 101 storytelling, and so it should be. But there's no harm in mixing up, especially here, as you say, Dan, because A, this show was broadcast on the MSG network, wouldn't have had a nationwide audience, anything really remotely close to it. And secondly, it's airing on this tape, Super Tape, which was released just a couple of weeks before WrestleMania 6 anyway. So it would probably get and keep people in the mood for seeing Jake get a decisive win over DiBiase at WrestleMania 6. We all know how that turned out. I do like that match of theirs as well, by the way. When 6 gets reviewed, I think people sleep on DiBiase, Jake. Again, there's more going on in that one than you might expect. Certainly not one of the very best matches at that show. It breezes by. Again, Jake's psychology holds right there. You, of course, get the promo wallowing in the muck of avarice. Oh, just chills just thinking about it. So yeah, these two had some very good chemistry, and this one is worth checking out. Again, beware the length might not be for everybody in that regard, but at least unlike the other match, it probably is worth sticking with. And Jake, again, I'm going to say one more time, Jake Roberts getting a pinfall win over Ted DiBiase at the beginning of the feud can be done here and there. Right, what's next on our tape? Tony is in the studio in, Dan, what I think might well be his final on-screen appearance. He was at WrestleMania 6, as we now know from a certain Down Market podcast, but he didn't appear. Did he appear on camera at 6? I don't think he did. Interviews? Maybe he's on the Coliseum video doing an interview on that. I don't think he's on the pay-per-view.
Ring a bell, though, but
certainly
yeah.
Not commentating, as we know.
No.
We all know who's in the booth for that one. They're probably there. Utter masterclass between those two. But yeah, so he left just after 6, I believe. It was pretty much a whole year he was there.
He was there for pretty much exactly a year, because his first was SummerSlam 89, wasn't it?
Yep, he was on the call for that one.
And then he's gone, I think, by then, and he's back in WCW by, I want to say, Halloween Havoc, or around that time, 90?
I think he's doing interviews at Havoc 90, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's around then.
When we get to 91, he's definitely involved.
Yes.
Towards the end of 90, almost I'm then. Sure he's there. I'm sure he does some stuff at Starcade as well.
Yeah, and, I think so.
Maybe I'll brave those late 90s. Well, I like Halloween Havoc 90, actually. Two very good matches in that one. So maybe I'll broach that again and we can find out once and for all. But he is still currently with us in the WWF, if only for a few more days. And he is here today to introduce fans across the world. What is on the fans' mind? Well, by the looks and the sound of it, not very much. Am I right? What do we get? We get the usual Hogan impersonation, which by 1990 was already old hat. We get people putting over Warrior, and I'm sure none of that was prompted in any way. Even then, we seem to get more calls for the Hulkster rather than the Warrior, including an old fella who looks terrifyingly like Tully Blanchard does now. You know when Jimmy Page climbs the mountain and sees his older self in the Song Remains the Same soundtrack film? That's the kind of thing I mean. Some youngster predicts a time limit draw if the two of them ever faced each other. Don't give them ideas. Funniest moment for me is the kid who tells us he has nothing to say, but drops in a ho anyway. From the mouths of babes, as they say. Dan, in other places I have had, we'll call them rants. Some even officially name them Rory rants about a certain type of pro wrestling fan. And now is not the time or place, but a lot of the people they were able to collar for this segment, maybe I've got a point.
Yeah. So my notes on this one was, yes, a very young looking Tony Schiavone saying he'd been all around the world, which then equates to London and then places in America. So that's all around yes. the world, is it? And then going through it, didn't hear any London accents. Could have may have missed any, but I don't think we actually did hear anyone outside of the US on this. It was mainly again billed for Mania 6. Interesting point that I've got is a young lad says that the Warrior is the best and all that stuff whilst wearing Hogan gear.
Yes indeed.
not sure about that, but yeah, relatively inoffensive, but yeah, not really sure why this needs to be here. It as we go through this does seem to be more and more like this was probably released as a sort of primer for Mania 6 in a weird way.
Looks that way, doesn't it? Yeah. It came out, I think it was March 23rd was its release date in the States. So if you are watching WrestleMania 6 live, and you've only got a week.
Yeah.
But again, I'll talk about this at the end, but that is something I do at least like the idea of. They've got a goal in mind for the existence of this tape, and that's good. But yeah. Interviewing these people, maybe not the best medium for it. They were all enthusiastic enough. And they weren't, best of all, that none of them were called members of the WWE Universe. So, small mercy to them. So, now we go to Superstars. So, we get some Vince McMahon on this tape at last to see Tugboat make his debut against none other than Iron Mike Sharp. All together now. Sharp so obviously misses with a dropkick that it is even funny. Also amusing is the attempt to blur out the Superstars of Wrestling drapes, which isn't entirely successful. And I've Rory ranted about that before. But one more time, Albert Patterson, please get off your high horse and let us get some proper Superstars on the network. Thank you. Vince tries to convince us that Tugboat really does look like a tugboat. I'll tell you what, on his back, you wouldn't even make it out of Blackpool Pier. The big fella tries a dropkick of his own. Enough said. Standing splash, and there you go. Dan, at least we got Vince to say, forget about it. But slim pickings otherwise.
Yeah, but looking on sort of the positive of this, this was, again, supposed to be sort of Tugboat's debut, and it was a squash, unlike the...
True.
really long Bushwhacker debut. This was a quick, short and sweet debut. Yep. And I would have actually wouldn't have mind. It would have been nice to actually get like a minute or two about Tugboat then. If this was this was his introduction, give us a bit more about him then. I know it would have been on Superstars, and those watching the TV at the time would have probably got a vignette or two. But why not? Why not before the match have a vignette for Tugboat and then go into his match? That would have been. I think that would have been nice to have. And yeah, the match itself was. It was exactly what it needed to be. I actually quite liked the attempted dropkick by Tugboat. I think it was interesting to see a big man do something like that. That wasn't Earthquake. I think previously that's where I probably would have only seen it before. And I must say, with that big splash for the finish, he actually got some decent high on it, I thought. Unlike Bundy or Akeem, who seemingly just fall onto people. That looked like an actual athletic jump to the splash for the win. So... yeah, I thought it was fine for what it was.
Ever picking the positives. It got him over, and it got Iron Mike Sharp finally on these shows. It's taken far too long. I love that man. Canada's greatest athlete, and you'd better believe it, brother. I think I'm just burnt, because on the very first senior video, we had to endure a Tugboat match. There have been one or two since. There will be a lot more to come, so I'm just trying to push them to one side. I'm glad you're here, Dan, to try and sprinkle a little bit of positivity on matches involving dear old Uncle Fred. But
I do
a noble effort from you, I'll give you that. Otherwise, I'm very happy to move on very quickly.
Yeah.
And so now we are going to wrap with the real, what I would say is the real selling point of this tape. The No Holds Barred pay-per-view main event, no less. Full disclosure, I have never previously seen this matchup in any way, shape or form. So there you go. Let's discover it together, shall we? For what is being called by Vinny the tag team event of the decade, with 5 days to go before the end of it. The heels have to make do with the jobber entrance as we begin with the faces coming to the ring. Brutus is wearing a Hulk Rule shirt. I doubt that needed much in the way of persuasion. Nor indeed the fact that Hulk then tears it off him. I just report these things. Sherry jams the door into Hogan to start us off. Well, okay. So he is trapped outside as Savage and Zeus go to work on the beefcake. Savage grabs Hulk through the ring, through the cage, I should say. Through the ring would be something. And Sherry locks the door. Hogan is still able to get in shots through the cage, because of course he is, then manages to climb in unencumbered. Of course he is. So the disadvantage lasted for no more than 30 seconds. He goes straight for Zeus and stuns the big guy. Takes a while to knock him down, but a shot or two to the cage does it. Savage gets destroyed and hurled into the cage. As we then hear from Vinny, this is not a pretty match. Macho is now selling for Beefer and eating a boot from the Hulkster. Atomic drop on a forearm, that was nice, as they now double team Zeus with chops. But he blocks and sends them both into the cage. Savage starts to climb, but Beefcake is able to grab him, whilst Zeus chokes out the Hulkster. Sherry tries to help Savage, but she only gets part of a noggin knocker for her troubles. Savage can recover, though, and stops Beefcake going anywhere. Hogan is out of it as the heels go to work on Brutai. Then they pick up Hogan and throw him into the cage. Simple strategy, but I like it. They repeat this on both good guys for a while until Macho calls on Zeus to climb out. But Hogan is up and stops it. Of course he is. Plus a superplex off the cage. That looked a little wonky to me. And now all four men are down. Sherry yanks the door open, and that means the ref eats it, and she has a chair with her. She presents it to Randy, who now leaps off the top of the cage with it, but sadly he misses with the chain shot. I meant chain, not chair. It really should have been a fucking chair shot, shouldn't it? Just finish it off. Beefer, I wrote this in Notepad if you hadn't guessed. Beefer now has it and gets off the wind-up punch. Zeus somehow has a pin attempt on Hogan, but no, just no. He comes into his own, as Vince puts it, just as Savage falls off the cage. Beefcake can now get out very easily, but we're not done yet. Both team members have to be outside the cage to be victorious. Well, there's another way to do it. This makes Beefcake pulling Savage to the outside through the door a little odd, or at least it would if Hogan wasn't about to leg drop Zeus three times and get the extremely academic three count. Eons of posing in shoes until a very sharp edit from where Vince is plugging the Royal Rumble, I think, on pay-per-view, to Sean back in the studio, wrapping us up with extreme haste. Just enough time to tell us that the WrestleMania 6 tape will be out on April the 25th. So there we go. Dan will talk about the rather abrupt end to the video in a second, but this match, it had been a few months in the making. We didn't have to sit through the No Holds Barred film to get to it, like unlike a lot of people sadly had to do back in December 1989. And this was okay.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it was obviously only ever going to go one way. If you think different to that, then you don't know who Hulk Hogan is. But yeah, it was fine. It's a match I'd heard a lot about before, and I don't think I've seen it before this. But I thought it was fine. It's a 10-minute sort of cage match, culmination of the feud that had been going sort of off and on for about sort of 6 months here or there. And yeah, I think it was quite good for like a tag cage match, which can always be a bit awkward. The bit about Beefcake pulling Savage out, I think, was actually an interesting sort of move, because then it negates that 2-on-1 advantage that the heels would have had, which is always a bit of an odd sort of circumstance when in sort of tag cage matches that I've seen sort of before this, and sort of that happened previously, like I think like Edge and Christian versus the Hardys was one which had sort of a similar sort of issues around it, that it's great that the faces can escape the cage, but then if one does, the other one, they're kind of almost screwing their partner out in getting to a handicap situation. So interesting sort of way around that by getting Beefcake to drag Savage out, so to avoid that handicap match sort of scenario happening. But yeah, it was fine. It was, I say, it was only ever going to go one way, but it didn't hang around too long, which I think was good. Unlike some of the other matches we've watched tonight, 10 minutes I think is exactly the time it needed to be.
Yeah, it was short, it was to the point, and it did its job and closed the book on this feud. It's not really a whole lot to break down about the match. What you got there in my notes was what happened, and it's all very self-explanatory. As much as I love SummerSlam 89, and if you go back and listen to the latest edition of the Special Relations show, you'll hear me as part of a live watch of that one. And I was gushing over most of it for the ensuing 2 hours and 38 minutes, although I still do have my quibbles with who pins who at the end of that one in the main event. Here, I think it was fine. Hogan decisively beating Zeus with 3 leg drops, and I have my suspicions as to who had the final say as to how this one finished, but it did work. Zeus got to look pretty damn strong. He got a visual pin on Hogan at some point, for goodness sake. And okay, that's the best he was ever going to get, but I still think it's more than he could ever have hoped for, really, in this or any universe. Beefa was fine. Savage didn't have to do as much for everybody as he did in the SummerSlam 89 main event. So he didn't really get involved a massive amount in this one. It was more about Zeus, with Savage being there to make sure that everybody just remembered what they needed to do, like the ring general he was. I could watch Savage in any role at any time, and impartiality is just an impossibility, I'm afraid. Even when he's not heavily involved, he's doing everything he needs to and a whole lot more, and it's just a joy to behold. I didn't hate Beefcake in this one more than a lot, so that's a start, I guess. And as I say, just the way to wrap it up, and a good inclusion on this tape, I think. I don't know what the buy rate was for the No Holds Barred pay-per-view. I could look it up. I don't want to really embarrass anybody by possibly reading out the number, but I don't think that putting this on this tape was a mistake, and anybody would really have felt shortchanged if they bought the pay-per-view. Perhaps they would, but for different reasons. So putting this on here as our effective main event, very sensible, very, very wise, and it's fine. It's not as good as the SummerSlam 89 main event. Hasn't quite got the crowd heat, hasn't quite got the importance, nor does it have the 1% chance, and I do just mean a 1% chance, but it's there, that the heels could go over, especially as the way Zeus, RIP Tiny Lister, was shown to be in the previous weeks. Here, always going to be Hogan going over at the end, but sent Zeus packing after a very strong summer after a decent Survivor Series that also put some good heat on this match. It ended the right way. It doesn't go long. I don't think it's 10 minutes, even that. Wise choice to end this tape, and probably the right way to end 1980s Hogan by winning a match like 1980s Hogan. Certainly post-1987 Hogan, anyway. Dan, just before we get to the end, what did you think of the very, very quick rush to the finish of this tape?
Yeah, that was very, very odd. So clearly edits thrown in there, and just to make sure it gets under that 2-hour mark so they don't have to fork out for a 3-hour tape, just quickly chop it in, get under that 156, I think it came in at, just to make sure.
Good old short play.
Get it in and stuff. Exactly. One quick point, if I go on to it. Just out of sort of curiosity, I actually looked up the No Holds Barred sort of match movie sort of pay-per-view.
Okay.
And found the card for the rest of the night. And I'll just quickly go through it. Dusty Rhodes versus The Boss Man.
Okay.
Warrior versus Dino Bravo for the Intercontinental title. Colossal Connection versus Demolition for the tag belt. And this is interesting. The match before what we watched was Perfect versus Garvin, which I think actually might be that opening match. Might be.
Could be, you know. Right. Just thinking about it. And again, if I'm wrong, and I very probably am, you know where to find me. Is that where the Colossal Connection win the titles?
It isn't. No.
Okay.
The result here is that Colossal Connection won by count out this night. I think they then won it probably not long after. It was definitely sort of within. It was before the Rumble, wasn't it? I think it was still about probably a week or so after this that they actually did win the belts. But yeah.
And Warrior Bravo, I think, is on Super Tape 2.
Yeah, that brings about.
I'll wait until I get there. I've already put myself through it once. I think it might be a while until I get to the sequel for this video, but sure. I reckon that's where that one comes from.
Okay.
And I'm sure, was it Dusty versus Boss Man? I reckon that's going to be lurking around here somewhere as well.
Yeah, well, they had the match at Rumble 90, didn't they?
Which match?
Was it Dusty Rhodes Boss Man? Was that a Rumble? Was that Rumble 90?
It was Duggan Boss Man.
Oh, yes. Oh, Dusty Rhodes Boss Man comes from Survivor Series. Cool.
Yeah, Dusty was in the Rumble. I actually watched Rumble 19 yesterday as it happened.
Of course he was, yes.
He eliminated Savage.
Yeah.
And was eventually punched out by Earthquake, as I recall. Oh, I love Rumble 90. What a great match that is. Anyway. Top five. I'm going to say, this is not my place. Anyway, top five Rumble. One of the very best. Booked perfectly from start to finish. There is always somebody in there from the first bell to the last who the crowd care about, and that is how you do it. All-timer. Anyway, let's get back to this tape to wrap up. And that does bring us to a very sharp end. So let's give out some awards for Super Tape 1, shall we then, Dan? So what is our rewind moment on this tape, i.e. the best match or moment or segment?
I was torn between the main event, just because it's one I had never seen before and wouldn't mind sort of seeing it again, possibly, just because, I mean, the people involved. But I think Perfect Garvin sticks out. It was a great way to start the video, and I could watch it again. It was, like you say, Garvin's sort of estimation in terms of what wrestling's like now has gone up, and Perfect's perfect. It is a really good match, and yeah, I could happily watch that again.
I'm also going to pick the opener between Garvin and Perfect. You're right to bring up our main event. I do think that's something everybody should see at least once. But from a pure match quality perspective, then it was Garvin Perfect for me. Really, really strong stuff. In more ways than one. What's our fast forward, though? What's our worst match or moment or segment?
I think you may agree with me. I'm happy to fast forward the whole Bushwhackers bit.
I fast forwarded talking about most of it, so it's a bit of a clue.
If you had to pin me down to just a single match, the Bolsheviks match is the worst one out of the three, but more than happy to skip the whole lot.
Yeah, poor old Boris Zukov has picked up this award once or twice already, and I've only been doing this for a year. I think you should probably get used to it. Yeah, I'll go for everything Bushwhackers related as well. It wasn't funny. It was very puerile. And there was nothing in ring, even in spite of itself, that you could cling on to and use as a positive here. So, again, I'm going to say it one more time. Santana Rude was hugely disappointing, but by their high standards, they were able to acquit themselves. The Bushwhackers have no such defence, I'm afraid. So they take it here. What is our pause, our most striking visual?
Now, despite fast-forwarding all the way through it, my pause would be Gene is a Bushwhacker. I think if you fast-forward all the way to the end and just that last little visual right before the next segment, that's fine. Just that's the punchline that the whole point was making up for. Gene becomes a Bushwhacker. That's fine. Have that as a caption, as a picture, not a problem. But the rest of it, don't need to watch it.
Indeed. I'm going to definitely go for 2021 Tully Blanchard in early 1990. God, that's scary.
That's
the very spit, there, as we say. What other awards have we got? We've got our video star. Who would you say is our MVP of these 2 hours?
This was tough because there wasn't much to pick from. Yes, we sort of talked about how good Perfect and Garvin was. But to say they were the star of the video, I'm tough. So I'm going to just have to go for a comedy pick on this one. I'm going to go with Gene. He earned his money having to go through those segments.
Yes.
And then, so yeah, he's my star. He made me laugh. He always does. So I think you'll probably see that going forward in some of your videos. Gene definitely earns his money in this one.
His heart wasn't in it, neither was his brain. And despite my criticisms earlier, I can't really blame him. And he deserves to be thrown a bone, despite having needed to eat one as part of this segment. Yeah, so I'll give Gene our MVP video star for this. And now our big one, the final award. How good is this tape? Is it a buy, i.e. very, very good indeed? Is it a rent? Not bad. Is it a bargain bin? Don't go out of your way to see it, but maybe check it out if you have a bit of spare time. Or is it a wipe, an outright avoid? Dan, where are we going?
Initially, I had written down a wipe, but now we've talked about it and gone through it, I'm definitely sort of leaning more towards the bargain bin. I think there's enough on this tape that's worth watching again. The open and the close are basically the two things worth watching again. DiBiase Roberts is also sort of decent watch. The rest you can sort of skip through, to be fair. But yeah, I think if at the time I'd sort of seen it for sort of £5 or whatever, I would have happily picked it up then. I think that's fair. There's enough on it that's worth buying, but I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a good tape.
Yeah, it's definitely not in the top tier. It's not a buy. But for me, this one does just, and I mean just, sneak into the rental, our second tier of quality. And I think part of the reason for that is how well this tape was structured. You got your intro at the beginning, you've got your first match, you've got your manager profile, which we were disappointed with, but it was still there. So the first match was a fan favourite match, so it's got a reason to exist, at least in this world. You've got your feature matches, you've got your segment, like it or not. You've got piece of the action, which was something a bit different. You've got Tony introducing us to all the fans. Lovely. And you've got the big build up to the main event in that regard. And it felt like a 2 hour magazine show. And that was good. A lot of these tapes, even a lot of the better ones, they're really rather higgledy-piggledy and matches and segments just pulled out of nowhere with no real rhyme or reason. This one had a focus from start to finish, and that is to its credit. Definitely a tick mark there. A great opener, important closer, noteworthy match, Roberts and DiBiase. Horrible Bushwhacker segments drag it down. Disappointing match between Tito doesn't help, and Tugboat, my thoughts on him are well documented, but this one does have enough going for it. Well structured, well put together, a lot of stuff you could do far worse than check out. So for me, this one is just about, and it's right on the cusp between 2 or 3, but it's a rental for me. So good work, Super Tape, all top. And that brings us to the end of this edition of Senior Video. All that remains now is for me to thank Dan DeWitt for joining me. Dan, first, thank you very much for choosing Super Tape, and thanks very much for being on this show. It's been great to have you, sir.
It's been brilliant. Yeah, I really like this. Going back to sort of my childhood times of watching wrestling, even though this is before I was interested, these were the videos I was kind of watching, and so either I had them or friends did. So to go and watch this era of wrestling again was always fun, and yeah, really great. And yeah, so uncovered some matches that I didn't know, wouldn't kind of make probably knew exist, but didn't know I liked. So definitely that Perfect Garvin one really sort of stands out now. It's one that I'll hopefully sort of watch sort of something similar of, and maybe go and see some more Garvin around that time.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons I'm doing this show, really, because I do think that there's so much good stuff on the network, and I'm far more of a supporter of it than I am a detractor. But I do think that a lot of what we now call the golden era is poorly served on the network for whatever reason. Yes, as I said earlier, we're finally getting some episodes of Challenge. It's taken them long enough. Really, outside of the pay-per-views and Saturday night's main events, and perhaps the prime times, but they're a bit scattershot as well, the home video classic section is the best place to go for a lot of this classic late 80s, very early 90s stuff. And as I didn't really start watching until 96 and had a intentional blind spot towards a lot of this stuff, which I thankfully got rid of now, then a lot of this, I'm discovering it for the first time. And if I can get people on who actually know this stuff quite well, then we can get a really good back and forth discussion going. And if I can introduce people to stuff they might otherwise have overlooked, much like myself, then I really am doing my job here. Dan, where can people find you, my man?
I am on Twitter at DSD247. I don't post often, but it's mainly sort of wrestling related, as you'd expect.
And of course, you can be heard on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast here and there.
Of course, yeah. Always happy to make a guest appearance here, there, and everywhere, whichever
not
brand.
Not too much WCW to go now, my man. So,
in a weird way, unfortunately not.
in a very weird way, yes. We will definitely have you on again shortly, and I'm very interested in your views, in particular about the invasion angle when we get there.
Oh,
so
yes,
I will make sure you are one of those prime WWF shows in the summer. Excellent. But all that remains for me after giving down the floor is just to tell everybody where else you can listen to me. Obviously, I am indeed on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. WWF and, for not much longer, WCW and ECW, covered there with brand new shows each and every month. Here on the Place to Be Nation network, you can hear me on the Special Relations with my chums Callum and Ben. So the last show we dropped went out on Boxing Day, where we all live watched SummerSlam 89. Seasonal enough that it was, but any excuse to watch that any time of year. New show from us should be dropping in a couple of weeks. I also guested on Chicken Salad with Ben, where we tried, hope against hope, to find good stuff to talk about from the Royal Rumble 2006 pay-per-view event, Dan. Now, we talked about 1990 earlier, 06 a little lower down the list, it's fair to say.
Just a touch, yeah.
Listen to that one to find out how well or otherwise we did there. And if you listen to the Place to Be podcast, the mothership, as it is known, tomorrow, might just hear another familiar voice there with Justin and Scott, but tell them I sent you. So that brings us to a close for Senior Video Episode 10. I believe there are another 59 videos remaining for me to be done over the next 5 years. If more drop on the Home Video Classic section, or if somebody can furnish me with an original copy of something that is not yet on the network, WrestleFest 94 springs to mind, then do get in touch and we'll see what we can do. But thank you so much for listening to this. This one's going to come in at about 1 hour 20 minutes. Don't want to keep you for too long. Really, this show is to just point you in the direction of stuff that you otherwise might have missed, especially as Home Video Classics is tucked right at the bottom of the, I think it's the original section of the network. Takes a bit of finding. I should say Super Tape. I couldn't actually see in the list. I had to put it in the search bar. And we all know how good that is.
It did take some searching, certainly, yeah.
They need to sort that out. Anyway, if I can point anybody towards good stuff, and only the good stuff, via doing this show, then I will continue doing that for a very long time. But Dan, thanks one more time for joining me, good sir.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Super Tape, I have seen your video. And I'll see you all next month.